Hello everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording on a blustery, cold, sub-zero night here in Reykjavik. We've had a slight return of the winter, as we always do. It always lulls you into a false sense of security, and then gets you with a zero-degree windstorm like the one that we are in right now. But the games that I played this week all felt, in different ways, like little holidays. Little holidays from this chilly Arctic isle that I live on. I played a bit of Terra Nil, the long-awaited, much-anticipated reverse city builder. I played a little bit of Forza Horizon 5, the Rally Adventure DLC has dropped, and a new season in that game. So it's been really fun dipping back into that game set in Mexico. And best of all, I played the featured game of this week, which will be Chia, the freshly released tropical open-world adventure. And that was a really nice time too. We're listening to some of the music from it right now. I got a lot of thoughts on that one, positive and negative. It was a really good time though, overall. So I'm looking forward to talking about that one with you today. And I have to say, it's been a bit of a stacked time for indie games. It feels like a lot of indie games have all dropped at once. We've had Terra Nil, we've had Highwater, both of those interestingly coming from Netflix games. So I've been playing both of those on iOS devices, which is a refreshing change actually. I rarely use my phone for games, or at least other than word games, you know. But Terra Nil and Highwater are two full-fledged indie games that I was really looking forward to. Storyteller also came out, and Have a Nice Death, both of which are on Switch. So I think that this has been already a fantastic year for indie games, with Dredge, with Birth, with Chia, and with all of those games that I just mentioned. And I will actually be going on a real-life trip next week, rather than a video game holiday. I'm going to go and visit the UK to see family and hop over to Dublin for the first time, actually, to visit a friend. So it's really great to have Terra Nil, Highwater, Storyteller, Have a Nice Death. I've got a really nice little range of different kinds of games there that I can just take with me on my phone and on my Switch, so I've got lots to play on my trip. But before we get into that Chia review, let me just mention briefly, this is a patron-supported show. If you're a regular listener, or if you're just finding the podcast today, you're welcome to come and join our Discord community and support this podcast at patreon.com/gaminginthewild. You'll get a whole bunch of bonus episodes for patrons only. The Discord is a really wonderful place to come and hang out and talk about games. And we have sale recommendations, we have dedicated game channels for new releases. So if you would like to support this show and become a patron, you can do so at patreon.com/gaminginthewild. I really appreciate all of my patrons, and thank you to you if that's something that you would consider. I'd also like to say thank you for the iTunes, Apple Podcasts reviews that people leave. I read them all. Sometimes they are really heartening, so thank you to everyone that leaves a review, and thanks to everyone who drops a star rating for the podcast on Spotify, and who tweets out about the podcast, who retweets my podcast tweets, and who shares it with friends. I really appreciate all of that stuff, so thanks very much to all the patrons and listeners. And now on with the show, with that review of Chia. So Chia came out on March 21st of this year. It was developed by Awaseb, or Awakeb, I'm not sure, a small studio that grew over time during the development of this game. They are from New Caledonia, or at least two of the main minds behind the game is from New Caledonia. This is an island off the east coast of Australia, out in Australasia. And this game is a bit of a love letter to New Caledonia in lots of ways, lots of the music, lots of the culture, the mythology, the geography. They flag that up heavily. It's the first thing that you see when you start the game. So it is a love letter to New Caledonia in many ways. It was published by Kepler Interactive. It came out on PS4, PS5 and Windows. I played it on PS Plus. It's on the mid and top tiers over there. A really nice one. It's the second, only the second day one indie since Stray on PS Plus, so it was lovely to get another one. I played on the PS5. It was a little framey and a little glitchy and buggy at times, but they have dropped a major patch including a 60 FPS mode for the PS5, which is dumb luck for me, but that's what you get for playing on release week. You often get a slightly different experience than people that play a little later after the patches. The game has a wonderful soundtrack composed by Robert John Matz. He describes it as a labour of love. It's 64 tracks long, was made over 5 years, and is another ode to New Caledonia, this time to the folk music tradition of the region. Metacritic has this game at 77%, around 8 out of 10, which I broadly agree with. How Long to Beat has it at a somewhat improbable 6.5 hours for the main quest, which I can only assume was a point-to-point speed run. That's not how I played. I really took my time. I meandered around. I often took a scenic route if I was going somewhere. I would fly over the mountains and roll around on the beaches and just take it all in, really. It's a very beautiful open world. I think I clocked in at around 17 hours, and that's at 81% map completion. How Long to Beat says that it's 22 hours for completionists, and there's a lot to do here if you like to go end to end through an open world game and strip the map of all the stuff to do. And the developers describe it like this. Chia is a tropical open world adventure. Climb, glide, swim, and sail your boat around a beautiful archipelago in this physics-driven sandbox. Take control of any animal or object you can find and jam on your fully playable ukulele. And I say it's a charming, sun-drenched open world adventure in which a child protagonist sails, runs, floats, and flies around two beautiful mountainous islands. The engrossing world casts a spell that's sometimes broken by some surprising decisions in the open world design. And Chia starts on Chia's home island. It's just a small sandbar out in a beautiful, glistening, gleaming, rolling blue ocean. There are just a few trees on the island. There is a little shack where Chia lives with her father. It's all about the nature. It's a really, really incredible natural spot. You just look around and it just pops your eyes immediately. The palette is really, really something. But it all goes wrong when Chia's father is kidnapped by some mysterious bad guys in a fume-belching helicopter who come and land on the island and steal him away. At that exact moment, Chia realizes that she has some kind of special powers. One of her eyes is brown and the other one is green, and her green eye bursts into light. And as her father is being dragged away, it's a little bit like in Star Wars when Luke can use the Force when shit's really going bad, but he can't use it when he really tries to do so. And at that moment, Chia soul jumps out of her body and into the sword, the machete that the kidnapper is holding. She uses that machete to cut him, but then she pops back out of the sword and rematerializes, and the helicopter gets away. And so Chia sets out on a quest to rescue him, and also a quest to kind of discover what her powers are all about, I guess, and to explore them and explore herself a little bit too. That's kind of all there is to it. It's pretty standard Disney movie kind of fare. It's not the strong point of the game by any means at all, but it's enough to get you off on the quest and enough for you to care about what's happening, and it gives you a good reason to go and explore the island, which is the strong point of this game. And that's because this is a really, really spectacular and beautiful open world. While the characters and the animals are all pretty simply rendered, like intentionally so, like people's faces have a kind of a nose that looks like it's been stuck on like a Mr. Potato Head, and all of the characterizations are cartoony almost, the world itself, the geography and so forth, is not exactly photorealistic, but it leans more into photorealism than the cartoony side of things. So even if the characters themselves are like they've sprung out of the Disney screen, the world itself is really fun. It's almost oversaturated. It's almost like they've pushed up the colours of nature. And so it really does just burst your eyes. It's a lovely palette, a lovely rendering. It has a little bit of film grain on it. It has motion blur, which I turned off as it makes me feel a little seasick sometimes. But I liked the film grain on it, actually. It just gave the whole thing a really nice, sweeping kind of feeling, I suppose. And the scenery is really something. It's just lush. It's beautiful. There are trees everywhere. The soil is bright colours that really pops. It's like sensory overload. The ocean is that tropical, bright, glowing blue that barely looks like it could be real. There are corals that you can dive into with all of the associated pink and green colours. There is dense jungle, wide white beaches. The sunsets, when they come, are just blazing pink. The whole sky turns luminous. It's just wonderful. The sea spray, the gull sound, it's a real vibe, this one. It's a real treat for the eyes and the ears. The graphics and the sound are really, really something. And although it's a smaller game, it did remind me of the same kind of true outdoors adventure feeling that I got in games like Red Dead Redemption 2 and Death Stranding. I thought about why I didn't get that quite so much in games like Horizon and Breath of the Wild. Like, I love those games. They're two of my favourite games ever. But I think it might be something to do with contrast. That there was something in Red Dead Redemption 2 where you spend all your time camping, horsebacking, mountaineering, going through snow, going through land, and then eventually you come to a town where there is electricity and bars and industry, and it's kind of a shock. It was like a slap to the face almost. And I really felt like I was coming in from a camping trip or something. And it's the same in Death Stranding. You start from these clean, silvery bunkers where there is mail sorting machinery and your little room that you can be in. But then you go out into the wild and there's very, very little there and you feel engulfed by it. And Cheetah had something about that in it too. You start on that tiny island and you travel directly to the capital city to try and get an audience with the ruler of these lands and find out what's going on with your dad. That leads to a huge quest. You have to go and gather offerings from all corners of the island. But something about the contrast of that small island where you live, the wide ocean that you boat over on your little raft with a sail, and the scale of the islands and how little there is on them. There are a few villages here and there, but it's mostly nature. Contrasted with the capital city, which has pavements and streetlights and parks and tower blocks and glass buildings and cranes. Something about that contrast really makes the nature pop. And you do feel like you're going out onto a hike or onto an adventure. And it's a really great place to go on an adventure. The main game is split into two main islands and a handful of smaller islets and little things out to sea that you can go and explore. The southern island has the capital town on it, which is like a city or a small city. It's a strange sight after all the beaches and the wilderness. It's got towering buildings and lots of gleaming, and it feels a little sterile compared to the nature in the game. There are NPCs to talk to, things to do. But outside of the city, it has red soil, really volcanic, rich red soil. It's a little barren. There is grass that looks like it's been worn away by the eroding sea winds. There are factories dotted around the coastline. There is industry. There is detritus that has been washed up. It's the more populous and the more modern day feeling of the two islands. But first of all, you have to go out to the northern island to start collecting these offerings. And the northern island is my favourite. It's more wild. It has a giant spine of high mountains that go up the middle of the island, cutting it into two sides, and with a few various valleys and crossing points, or you can hike across the top of the mountains. It has deep forests that are in like ruts in the ground, with giant trees of all kinds. It has white beaches, it has hills, there are cliffs all around the island too. There are wetland areas. It's got all kinds of geography. It's really interesting to explore. It has that feeling of loud, giant nature that we really feel keenly living here in Iceland. You know, the city is so small here and the mountains are so big and the snow is so deep that we just feel really, really deep in nature here. And that's a feeling that I really like, and it's a feeling that there is in this game. I would say that is helped by the massive draw distance. This game, you can see from one side of the game to the other. If you're standing on a mountain at the far north, you can look south, you can look across all of the things that you've passed by on your sailing adventures, and you can see all the way to the southern island, and you can even see buildings in the capital from the other side of the map. So the vistas in high places are really great, and they really help to bring this world to life too. There is some humanity up on that northern island. There are small villages that you can find, really, really small. There are docks that act as fast travel points once discovered. You can summon your boat there. You can customize your boat there. You can only fast travel to a dock from another dock, which is interesting because it means that you can't just up and fast travel from anywhere in the world. It makes you engage with the movement mechanics and the traversal and planning out where you're going to go a little bit more, actually. So it's a minor inconvenience, given that a lot of games let you fast travel from anywhere, but it makes you engage with the world more. I think Red Dead 2 did something similar. Death Stranding obviously did the same. So I think games that require you or ask you to really invest in exploring the landscape cut down on the fast travel to help you to do so naturally. There are also a few food stands dotted around that replenish your energy. There are collectibles, more of which in a bit. There are some open world mini games like point-to-point time trials. If you see a little checkered flag somewhere, then you can enter that flag voluntarily if you want to do it, and then you will race from point to point through the landscape. Some of those are really, really fun, actually. And I think in the early game, I had a bit of a rocky early experience with this game. I wasn't quite sure I was going to like it. I did feel that the world was a little empty at first. And that sounds strange coming from me, I guess, as a big Breath of the Wild fan. I like sparse worlds where the traveling is really the fun part of it. Something about the story setup and being spat out into this world. For the first 5 or 6 hours, I was a bit iffy and 50-50 about it. But once things really opened up and some of the mechanics clicked in, and I managed to scale those heights of the game and to really start engaging with it, I really found my stride with it. And there were some more ups and downs, but I think the exploration was something that never really got old. I even liked being made to go back to places I had been already, because there's always more there. There are some things that you just missed, or some things that you passed by or weren't convenient on your path, like a few pickups, a few collectibles. And it was just fun to move. I'm on the record as saying that I think good movement in a game that has exploration as a key tenet is absolutely essential, and it was really a pleasure just discovering this world. So about those movement mechanics, you can run and jump, of course, like you can in any game. There's a weird floaty jump that I don't quite understand. You can also sail on your raft, Wind Waker style. The controls are a little finicky. You have to let go of the rudder to change speed, and then let go of the mast to steer. So if you're changing speed too slowly, you're going to crash into something. There was lots of overshooting, lots of crash landing. I don't know why it wasn't like Assassin's Creed style, just speed and rudder at one time. But I do have a theory about some of these things, which I'll come to later on. You can also swim. There is an underwater world for you to go and explore. You can dive. You can get down to the bottom of the ocean, hold your breath. There is a Breath of the Wild endurance meter for swimming and for holding your breath. Also, Breath of the Wild-like is the climbing. You will stick to pretty much any vertical surface that you come up against, whether you are jumping onto a cliff, whether you are climbing up the side of a building, etc. And you will have an endurance meter that runs down, that you grow over time so you can get to higher places and navigate the world more easily. I will say that it feels a little too sticky at moments. You can stick to surfaces unintentionally, like if you just happen to be jumping past something or running past something, Chia will sometimes grab onto it, so it's a little too sticky. You can also float with a glider, Breath of the Wild style again, which has an endurance meter attached to it. If you run out of endurance at any point, you don't have health, but if you run out of endurance, you will fall if you are gliding. If you fall too far, then you just pass out. If you run out of endurance underwater, then you will pass out also. It's pretty punishment-free, though. You just restart somewhere nearby. You don't lose anything. It's not punitive at all. It's very forgiving with the autosaves and the restart points. You can also slide, which is actually really, really fun. At first, I used it when I was just running on a flat plane, and it was just like this little bloop. But then I realized that if you do it when you're going downhill, then Chia will rocket down the hill, producing a huge dust plume behind her. It's really fun to just slide down mountains and leap off precipices and then glide down to ground level. So all of these things click together really well. You can also climb up trees, and then if it's a palm tree, for example, you can rock the tree back and forward and catapult yourself off it. It's a nice ground level traversal mechanic. It's all in all, it's a very slick, agile, and rich moveset, I would say. It really helps you to feel like you are free within this world, which is a feeling that I just love. And this game really gets there with that. And all of this is without the best part of the traversal moveset, and that is possessing other things, known in this game as soul jumping. Soul jumping is in some ways what sets Chia apart from other open world games. It's the ability to jump into inanimate objects and animals. You hold down the L2 button to go into a slow motion mode. The color palette drops to grayscale and possessable objects are brightly colored and highlighted. Then you just let go to jump into whatever the object is, and Chio will instantly vanish and warp inside that target. This includes so many different things. It's a really fun part of the game. Rocks and boulders are included. You can possess a rock and then roll along the ground. You have a soul meter that starts off as 2 bars and grows and grows and grows as you add to it. When that runs out, then Chia pops out again. But after a while, you can possess things for a really long amount of time, and it's really, really fun to use. If you are a boulder, you can just roll along a pathway, which can be a little slow, but you can also jump. You just use the jump button and that boulder will bounce up in the air, and you can just bounce and bounce and bounce. It's really fun to just roll along as a boulder, and boulders are absolutely everywhere, so it's always a good emergency measure if you want to get somewhere fast and there is nothing faster around. Same goes for coconuts. You can always use your catapult to shoot one down from a tree, leap into a coconut and roll along the ground as that. A bunch of bananas, same thing. So there's lots of basic options, but you can also inhabit man-made objects. My favorite one was a beach ball that I found early in the game, and I added it to my inventory, not really understanding that you shouldn't just pick up and keep everything that you find because some things are more useful than others. But I found that beach ball later in the game and realized that I could select it so that Chia will hold it above her head from an inventory wheel. And then you can just tap one button to possess the object that you are holding. And if you're a beach ball, it's so convenient. It bounces so high. It makes a really good smacking sound when it hits the ground. And you can just bounce up mountains as a beach ball. Absolutely delightful. So I just kept that beach ball in my inventory for the entire game. It was a really fun thing to be. But you can inhabit so many other things too. Not all of them are as useful, but some of them are really funny to do once. For example, a teddy bear, which is a giant teddy bear from like a fairground stall. And it's all corners and strange angles. So it really clunkily tumbles and crumbles across the floor. It was really fun to possess a teddy bear and just roll around for a little bit. And the same for a big gas drum that you might find sticking out of the beach. All kinds of man-made rubbish, books, anything that you can find. And all animals too, like cats, chickens, anything that you can see, you can inhabit. Cows, they all have a gameplay implication too. For example, if you're a crab, then you can snip things, which comes in useful if you need to snip something. If you're a dog, you can dig, which is very useful if you're on a treasure hunt where there are some X's marking spots. So there will be times when you need to jump into a certain kind of animal to solve a puzzle. And that's just on top of the wonderful feeling of, for example, running along the beach as a dog, splashing through the tide, jumping into a tide pool. Just feels absolutely wonderful. I was smiling from ear to ear. My favorite of all, though, was to possess birds. They are absolutely the best thing to possess in this game. They allow you to travel so far, so fast. And to see the world from a bird's eye perspective is just really, really fun. You can also just grab animals and put them into your inventory too. So I tried keeping a bird in my inventory, but when you jump out of them, they are hard to grab before they fly away again. There are some mechanics to allow you to summon animals though. You can use your ukulele for that as the game progresses. So the animals really do become your friends in this game, and quite central actually to how you move through the world. Another good example is underwater. For example, if you're swimming underwater and your breath runs low, you can look around and jump into a fish or a shark or a turtle. That will allow your breath to recharge, even if you are very deep underwater. But your soul meter will then be going down. But then you can jump out of that turtle when your soul meter runs out and use all of your breath and then jump into the next fish that you see. And that allows for some really exciting deep sea discoveries, like diving down to explore what is in the depths. It's all very impressive, and I don't take any of this for granted. I think if you take Chia's physical moveset of sliding, gliding, climbing, all of that stuff we talked about, diving, and then all of the stuff that you get from possessing all of these different objects, the sandboxy nature of that, all of these different animals, and all of the possibilities that can throw up in the game, it's just such a vastly impressive undertaking to make all of this work. And it really does hang together very well. So I think it's a huge credit to this team, this small team, to not only make all of the traversal mechanics that we expect on a third-person, big-budget, a AAA action-adventure, but to add this other layer of being able to jump into any animal or object that you can see. It's very, very ambitious, and they deserve a huge amount of credit for pulling it off. We'll be right back. are also a bunch of activities to do in the open world. They are stumbled over, but you get an online screen icon when you are near something that points you in the right direction. It's a small concession that I vastly appreciated. It's so easy to run past something in an open world, but you don't do that here. The most common is collectibles. You get soul fruit, which increase stamina. You get paper talismans, which act as currency. You can dive for pearls and treasures and that sort of thing. All of this you trade in at gift points and claw machines for only cosmetics. This is a bit of a bummer. I got a bit sick of cosmetics. All of the rewards are outfits. You can change your outfit at a campfire until you've got like a vast, expansive, pop star sized wardrobe of clothing at Chia's disposal. Some of it is punk stuff, some of it's traditional local costume, grass skirts, that sort of thing, modern streetwear, all sorts of stuff. But I got a little bit sick of that. I found a head-to-toe crab costume with a crab hat and a crab backpack, and I just wore that for the rest of the game. And that definitely took my enthusiasm a little bit from getting every chest or doing every enemy camp or whatever, because there's only so much clothing that is interesting in a game. There is also a rock balancing game. This is pretty fun. The camera looks right on at Chia, and she pulls out rocks of all shapes and sizes. You have to arrange them in a way so that they will sit on top of each other to a certain height. That gives you new ukulele abilities that really help you in the game, such as summoning different kinds of animals, changing the time of day, that kind of thing. There is a rhythm game. This happens in cutscenes. You will have a musical scene where Chia is playing with her father or with a friend, and you have to do a little rhythm game to make her play the ukulele. There is no reward for it, but you get a percentage mark, or you can hit L3 and just sit back and watch, which I normally ended up doing because I wanted to read the lyrics, and it was hard to do the game and read the lyrics at the same time. There is a wood carving game. You will find locked shrines with faces carved into them, and then carving stations where you have to carve those faces out, hit the button to carve out a basic face, and then adapt the face to carve away certain teeth, nostrils, eyes, etc. to match the shrine entrance. There is analog photography. You only get to see your pictures when you develop them, which is really, really funny in this age of digital photography and virtual photography, to have to take a picture and then not see it until you get to a developing station. Although, strangely, there is no photography quest. It seems like a no-brainer to go and photograph rare animals or something, but that wasn't in here. It would have been fun. The map is also very, very analog. This is a big sticking point for a lot of players, one of the biggest that I've seen. There is no player position on the map. So it's more like orienteering than using a GPS. Almost all open world games have a player position GPS style map, so you can always see where you are and move in the right direction. Here you have to ask Chia where you are, and she'll tell you based on proximity to a local town, village, or landmark, and then she'll ring a general area on the map. This really, really infuriated me at first and took a lot of getting used to. You can use landmarks. You do start to develop knowledge of the local landmarks and how things string together. I don't know if that was more knowledge than I would have got if I'd been doing it the other way. Maybe so, actually. Maybe it does make you more in tune with what is around you and to explore in a more mindful way. But given the many thoughtful concessions to low friction, easy gameplay, it's an odd feeling choice. It feels slightly stubborn almost. But like the extra step in the sailing, it does make you engage with the process a little more thoughtfully. You do get used to it. So I guess like with the sailing, with the map pin, they are definitely going for something. And I think it is to make it more tactile, to make it a more mindful, thoughtful play, to make you slow down, to make you do things a different way. But I can see it getting under some players' skin. It certainly did with me. By the end, I had gotten used to most of it. I'd really gotten used to the map. I just learned the islands, so navigating wasn't really a problem anymore. You can drop pins on the map and navigate towards those, so there is that. And you definitely do get used to it. The map is also revealed in the Assassin's Creed style way, which is just an oddity. Like you have to find high points and then Chia will let out a giant cry, like a big chi that echoes around the hills. And that will reveal icons near to you on the map. You can then pin those and orientate yourself and head towards them. All the collectibles, all the soul fruit, all of those paper trinkets and so forth. So there is quite a lot to do in this open world. There's enough to keep you occupied, that is for sure. Sometimes it can feel a little shallow, like you do a lot of picking up these paper trinkets. They are really the only main collectible. Every 1 in 10 is a soul fruit that will increase your endurance. Those are at least a little bit useful. The paper trinkets are just used to cash in and play these like claw gacha games where you grab a little plastic ball. All of that contains children's clothing. That's the only reward that you can get for those trinkets, which really de-emphasizes their importance. And given how much of the game you spend exploring by chasing those, it's just not quite hanging together in the right way, if you know what I mean. There are other downsides to the game too. There is combat in this game. This came as a big surprise to me and I think to a lot of people. We'd seen all the trailers, we'd seen the exploration, the wandering and so forth. It is combat in Chia's own unique style. You will find these enemy camps manned by these cloth demons that your enemy has summoned up with glowing eyes, just floating sheaths of cloth. You encroach on a base, usually based around a campfire, and then you can soul jump into lanterns, oil lanterns, or gas canisters. You can then hit L2 to slow down time, aim freely towards an enemy, and then fire that gas canister out. So you're like projecting it out of you, as that's what you were. It's like the soul jump mechanic weaponized. So you spit out a gas canister towards an enemy. If it hits them, they burst into flames. They will come at you. They will throw projectiles at you that tie you up, and you have to mash the button to get free again. Chia vaults in and out of objects so quickly that you can kind of zip around the base. It's a very different way of using the soul jumping. It's a neat trick. I mean, you can jump into a log from the fire and then roll around and burn everyone, which felt great as well. But these get bigger and more complex as the game goes on. And whilst some of them are optional, there are big ones that are not. They are story ones, so you have to do it whether you want to or not. And that's another sticking point that I think some people are going to have. It feels like a tonal mismatch with the laid-back atmosphere of the game. I think this game could have done without it. I will also note that the optional ones you get chests for, the same chests that you find on the bottom of the ocean, and every chest in this entire country just contains children's clothing. And as for why that might be the case, I'm just not even going to comment on. But, you know, it could have been anything. It could have been treasure. It could have been something to let you buy the clothing. It's just a little bit weak, you know. So onto the good parts and bad parts of this game. I would say that the strongest thing about the game is the world. It's the art style, the graphics, the luminous sunsets, the rippling seas. There is torrential rain. The weather, the day-night cycle is really cool. At nighttime, those collectibles all glow, so you can see them for miles around, which really helps you to find them all. In the daytime, the weather changes very, very quickly, and it's dramatic when it does. It's not just in-game rain. It is a torrential, soaking downpour that just seems to almost obscure everything. It's very dramatic and cool. It's very lush. It's a full-of-life world. There are animals everywhere. They're just jumping out of trees as you come close. There are boar rustling around. There are lizards on the beach and crabs. All of them, you can jump into them. It's so full of life. The sweeping vistas. I love getting to the top of a mountain and seeing the whole game world. I would also highlight that soul jumping mechanic. It's really, really fun jumping in and out of animals, experimenting with different inanimate objects, deciding what objects you want to keep so that you can turn into them at any point, like me and my beach ball, flying, swimming, bouncing along the ground, rolling, jumping, being a boulder, being a ball, being a bird. It's all so fun. It just really works. It's very, very vertical. I like that the flying takes you to the heights and the swimming takes you to the depths. It just makes the world all the more tactile and lush and rich. And once you're set loose in that open world, it is really fun just exploring the whole thing. You can get into the zone with the map clearing if you're in that mood. It was a little bit of a tonal mismatch to me, especially when it comes to the combat, but the topography is so fun. The mountains, the valleys, the beaches, that traveling around this world doing stuff is just great. And even after I rolled credits, I went on a multi-part treasure hunt quest using maps. Just because it's so much fun being in this world. It's engrossing, it's beautiful, it's a competent, well put together open world made by a very small team, and it's very impressive as such. As for the bad things, I had a couple of bugs. I had an unkillable, invincible enemy grunt and had to restart the game. I had a couple hard crashes. But that was the release week, and that may have gone in the patch. I would say that the story is at weak point too. It's a little formulaic and Disney-like, although it did take some unexpected turns. There is a little bit of darkness in this game too, and it does have local mythology woven into it, which does make it rich in some ways. But it was still, I don't know, the overall kind of save your dad thing, and the baddie and what that all means. It was a little simplistic. Those odd decisions, like the map pins, the boat steering, I got used to those. So they are here in the negatives, but honestly, it took me a while to get used to them, and I still feel quizzical about them. I have a raised eyebrow towards these decisions. But by the end of the game, I kind of get it. The cosmetic rewards, a bit cheap. I would have preferred to have something with a gameplay implication, or at least a little bit of variety. Not every single reward in the entire game has to be an item of clothing. It's like Jedi Fallen Order's lightsaber sheaths and like little capes, just times 100. The presence of combat and stealth, some of the stealthy stuff and the combat stuff, it was fine, it was fun. But at the same time, it was just a disharmony between the gameplay and the overall vibe. I'm really surprised that there is some unavoidable base attack type sequences as part of the story. It took me out of New Caledonia and it put me into like a tired Ubisoft formula, kind of. It's an unwanted influence. I would say like Metroidvanias that insist on having Souls-like elements that make them worse. For a lot of players, not just me, I would say that the Ubisoft influence here is really unrequired, and it actually diminished the best parts of this game by making it feel familiar in a way that I didn't like. When I think about games like Alba with the photography as a focus, and Pathless with that wonderful kinetic movement and the great story that you discover in that atomized way, they did much more interesting things with their open world than was done with this open world, and that's a bit of a tragedy. But that's it. I would say that overall, this is a very solid little game. It holds itself back a little in some respects, as I have described, but the exploration really is wonderful. I think it's a huge achievement for that team. It was a fun time. It's an easy recommendation if you like anything from Short Hike to Assassin's Creed to Breath of the Wild. If you're just very impatient for that game to come out, 6 weeks now and counting, you could do a lot worse than playing Chia. And I will say that I played it in several four-hour-plus sessions. I think four very lengthy sessions. I really couldn't put it down, which says enough. That's Chia. So that was Chia. I had a really, really good time with that game. I hope you enjoyed the review as much as I enjoyed making it and playing that game. I might have sounded like I was coming a little down on the game, and it is because it's really good, and it has that extra couple steps that it misses. It's so frustrating when a game does that, but I still heartily recommend it if any of that sounded interesting to you at all, especially if you've got PS Plus. What have you got to lose? Otherwise, I think it's $30, or it'll be on sale soon, no doubt. I've got a lot more interesting games coming up in my future. I've got Have a Nice Death, I've got Storyteller, I'm really dying to get back to Terra Nil, which I'm having a lot of fun with. High Water is also on the menu. So I've got loads of things to play on my iPad and Switch as I go out on my European travels over the next couple of weeks. Going to the UK, going to Ireland, very excited about the whole trip, and I've got loads of different games to play along the way. I will come back with another episode next week. I'm taking my mic, I'm throwing it in my case, so I will tell you all about what I played on my trip next weekend. In the meantime, I would love to hear from you if you have played Chia, or what you're playing next, or if any of those indie games that you'd like to recommend to me. You can find me on Twitter as Gaming in the Wild, or Instagram, Facebook, Twitch, YouTube. Pretty much anywhere on the internet you'll find a Gaming in the Wild account, and I'd love to hear from people, so please do get in touch. If you'd like to support the show and join the Discord, that's at patreon.com/gamingin the wild. And I really do appreciate people sharing the podcast with a friend, leaving a review or a rating, all of that kind of thing. You know the drill. I say it every week and I'm sure it gets old, but I really do appreciate that stuff. Anyway, take care of yourselves and each other. Thanks for listening, and bye-bye for now.